bit. Thank you. Maybe I'll just as quickly say over there just the case so that we'll have it on the, since the recorder just came and since very chashuv a person also just came, not in that order, since a very chashuv a person just came and the recorder just came. The case was that a man had borrowed, let's say, $10,000 from a friend of his, and before paying it back, his friend was nifter. His friend had no descendants. He had a wife who he was married to. He was married at the time that he died, and that's it. But he had no descendants, and he had a brother. He had a brother who would be his halachic yorish. So the question was, who to give the money back to? Should he give it to the wife? Maybe the money, as I said, maybe the money came from a joint bank account. Maybe it belonged to the wife at the time as much as the husband. Or maybe there was a will. Probably not a halachic will, but maybe there was a secular will. And now let me add to that, Shaila. We mentioned last week, there are poskim that say that we follow secular wills. It's a big Shaila. It's not at all pashut, and that's why we don't advise just doing a secular will. But there are poskim, we mentioned Rav Chaim Ozer and those who say like him, that since it's an idea of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, since the person expressed this as his wishes, and he did something to see to it that they will be honored by writing a secular will, which he expected would be honored. So maybe that's like being mashlish the money. That's mitzvah l'chaim b'yameis, where you gave the money over to a shlish, to a third party, to execute your wills, your desires. So since there are, and there's another mahalach, Rav Moshe has a slightly different mahalach, but he also honors secular wills. So there are poskim that do that. So maybe the person should find out. Maybe he has to find out if there's a will and give the money to the heir, or heirs. Or not. What does he do with the money? Does he give it straight to the brother? So as he's saying, Rav Chaim Cohen Paskin, that he gives the money straight to the brother. And he said, first of all, he said that, this is a phone conversation I had with him, it was a number of years ago, but I read down an exact date when I, you know, discussed it, just to give it at least in my mind, you know, shouldn't become too foggy. He said, even if there was a secular will, that he felt that would only have, even according to the poskim, that would honor it, that would only have jurisdiction over assets that were under in his control at the time of his death, money that's owed to him, debts that owed to him, which is, it's a chiddush haTorah that you even have to pay back, that they're not, that they're not lost, right? We don't say, well, the person died, I owe him the money, and he's gone. The fact that you have to give it to the Yarshim is a chiddush haTorah, so he says that would work with the Torah's Yerusha, he felt, it would not be affected by a secular will.
Are there opinions that you don't have to pay it back to anybody?
No.
No.
Okay. Now, if he said the fact that the money might have come from a joint account, he said it's also irrelevant, because even if money, kol zman, it's in that account, she has equal rights to it and she has equal ownership. Once he draws on it, any money he draws and he uses, that money is his. And that money is no longer, she no longer has any ownership of that money, and it's owed only to him. It's not owed to her. As they say, the money is just, he gave her equal rights to use the money, to take from the money, to draw, to write out checks. He might have, you know, we're assuming, to write out checks, etc. And when he died, any money left the account would automatically transfer to her because he made her part owner. But any money that's out, once he used the money, is out of the account, even if he only used it by lending it to somebody, he is considered the sole owner of that money. And therefore he said it does not go back to the wife. It goes back to the Irish. So he said the secular will is irrelevant. Where the money came from, what kind of account it came from, is irrelevant. And therefore he said that he should definitely give the money back to the Torah Yorish, who is the brother. However, he said, if there's a shtar, if he gave the person a loan document, being mechayiv himself the money, then he's not obligated to pay it back to the brother unless the brother can produce that document for him, return that document. Because if you owe someone money and there's a shtar, you don't have to give him back the money unless he gives you the shtar, because otherwise you can give back the money and then he could turn around the next day and say, you owe me $10,000, I paid you yesterday. What do you mean you paid me? Shtar, everybody learned the Gemara, shtar chabayadi maboy. If you paid me, why do I have the shtar still? Well, you said you couldn't find it at the time I trusted you. Really? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember any such conversation. So if I have a shtar saying you owe me $10,000, unless you challenge the shtar saying that it's forged or something, but assuming the shtar is a valid shtar, you're not challenging the validity of the shtar, or you have no basis to challenge the validity of the shtar, then just the fact that you say it was repaid is not going to get you too far, unless you can bring aidim. But or if you have a receipt, a person could get back the money, says, I can't find the shtar, okay, write me a receipt, and that's so I can produce, if you try to pull out the shtar, I can produce the receipt. However, a person who owes money is not obligated to accept a receipt. He may choose to if he wants to. If he really does trust the guy and says, just give me a receipt so that we don't, you know, neither one of us forgets about this, that I'm paying back the money. Please give me a signed receipt with Aiden that I paid back the money. But I don't have to accept that. I can insist on the shtar and say, Kolzman, you don't have the shtar. I'm not paying you back. So he said, if the brother who is, tells the brother, I owed your deceased brother $10,000, you're the Yorish, I'd like to pay you back. Could you please produce the shtar? Now, I don't know. You know, I don't know what happened from there. I don't know if that was practical or not practical. What? I don't know if the wife may have been in control of his document, and if she wasn't so observant, which I think that was the case, she might not be interested in giving her brother-in-law this document so he could collect the $10,000, which she may feel comes to her. And there might be a secular will saying that she yarshined, or there might be state law that she yarshined and everything. So I don't know what happened to Maisa, but that's what he said. So the money, technically, should be, the one to pay back the money to would be the brother, but he's not obligated to do that unless the brother could actually produce the shtar and, in return of the shtar. Yes?
In the case of the receipt, it's totally valid, huh?
Value, you said?
No. Let's say that I owe money to somebody and they have a contract, but he doesn't find the contract, and we do what you say about the receipt. It's valid.
Valid.
It has validity.
Yeah, it has validity. Yes, okay. Valid. As long as it's best to make sure it's signed, or maybe the person signed himself, have Adam sign it to make sure that he won't challenge it and say, I don't know. But yeah, it's valid saying that I hereby on this date, I received $10,000 as repayment for a loan. And it's as of today, He owes me, no money or whatever. Okay, so I thought there was just an interesting case, and it like brings out some of this. It's definitely food for thought of somebody who's not familiar with the laws of Yerusha, and might have thought differently, and it's something to think about. Okay, so now, so I want to give out the copies of this. You can keep these. I'll tell you where I got it from, and okay. This is it has it says conditional note to accompany legal will. This is what we call, there are more copies if anybody wants these copies here. This is what's called a shtar chatzi zachar in the Torah's in the Lashon Shulchan Aruch. Just to give credit first, this particular form of it was prepared by the Machon Lahara in Muncie, and I received it one. I actually have it in two forms. I have a kuntres that they put out, which contains this inside it. This was put out a number of years ago, but the halachas are the same. I don't know exactly what year. So I'll tell you one minute. This is copyright 1995 by the Machon Lahara. I actually, besides having it in here, I also got it in the mail. There's a based in Yerushalayim called the Jerusalem Institute for Dayanim. It's a kolel and a very well known Choshen Mishpat kolel, which now has a very well known and high level based in Mattersdorf in Yerushalayim, run by Rabbi Yosef Fleischman and Rabbi Yosher Flegg. Rabbi Flegg comes here. I don't know yearly, but he comes here, and Rabbi Fleischman, we were in this basement, and they did it as a mailing once, as a fundraiser mailing, I received it in the mail. The copy they sent me has their heading on it, but it says clearly reprinted from Machon Lera with permission. So they are sending it as a mailing. There's no anyone's allowed to cut. There's no copyright on this document, and as I said, it comes in here. Besides being printed, it comes with a removable one, so it's meant for the people to have. The reason why it's called Chatzi Zachar, just very simply, was Chatzi Zachar means half a male. The idea was that when a person was trying to find a shidduch for his daughter, one of the things that he was encouraged to do was to promise that whoever marries her will eventually inherit a share of his estate, not the same as a male, but half. 50, like if he has boys and girls, so he's saying, anyone who marries my daughter should know my daughter will receive a portion of the Yerusha, 50% of what her brothers will get. Chatzi Zachar. They thought that was a nice incentive. So, but they would offer it as a nod, and as the time of the marriage, is one of the ways of would be on the Shidduch resume, would say, that she has a shtar Chatzi Zachar, which entitles her to half the portion of a Zachar. That's where it came from. You could use it, the Chassam Sofer speaks and others, you could use it to give the person a Kol Zachar, a full portion, or any other. It's just that's the nusach, because that was recommended. Offer her 50% of what her brothers will get, and that should hopefully assist her in finding a good shidduch. Okay, So the idea, what's done here is the person writes a regular legal will. He goes to a lawyer, he goes to an attorney, and he writes the legal will. There are some details, maybe we'll touch on it, maybe not, but maybe what he should or shouldn't include in it. But it's basically a will based on his will, on what he wants. Now we learned in the past few weeks, there is an isser of disinheriting anyone entirely. Some say if you do it this way, as we'll explain, that doesn't even apply, but that's still recommended, not to disinherit. It's recommended to be equitable. It's recommended to include all your children equally, certainly if they're all Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs, and assuming also, certainly if their financial status is all within the same ballpark, that none of them are like, you know, Gevira Muflugim that own, whatever, half the real estate on the globe, and others are poor. No, assuming they're all in the, whatever it is. So be as equitable as possible, or certainly be fair. It's recommended. But whatever, you could do whatever you want in the will, and that should be drawn up legally with all the legalities necessary, that it would be binding and functional in any, presentable in any court of law. Then you just simply fill out this document. What this document says, let's read it. It says, I, you know, the person who wrote the will, the undersigned, do hereby state that I am indebted to. Now, there you write the name of any individual who you're granting part of your inheritance to in your will, who is not a Torah Yorish. Right, anybody who according to the Torah would not get a Yerusha, but you want to give them some of it, and in your will it says they should get, you put their name there. You could fill out more than one of these. Some of them give line room for multiple names. Otherwise, you could just write the same thing over. You know, just make a copy of this, make a one. Now, this man has a son and two daughters, and he wants them to split 33, 33, 33. So he writes to each of his daughters, one for each of his daughters. I so and so do hereby state that I'm indebted to, and he writes his daughter's name, Chana Goldstein. Just made that up. In the amount of, now the amount he puts in here is recommended to be an amount which is greater than his entire estate. Because the idea being is that if his son wants to contest the will, say a secular will, I don't hold of secular wills, and I'm going to find a basin that doesn't hold of secular wills, and they're going to tell my sisters that they have to give me everything. So say, fine, you want to take everything, fine, but I am indebted to your sister in the amount which is greater than the whole Yerusha. The Yerusha is on $1 million Yerusha. I'm indebted to your sister, Chana Goldstein, for $5 million. And to your other, another paper which says your sister, Sarah Friedler, also $5 million. So I'm indebted $5 million to each of your sisters. The whole Yerusha is only $1 million. So if you want to fight the will and take the Yerusha, hey, go take the $1 million, and now you owe $10 million to your two sisters. So you're going to see, you know, he only owes it out of the estate. Of course, you don't have to get $500,000 to one and $500,000 to the other, but then that's it. I'll end up with nothing. That's the idea. So in the amount of, let's say, $5 million, payable 1 hour before my death, period. To secure the aforesaid debt, I hereby pledge all property, both real and personal, by virtue of the Talmudic act of acquisition, as agav, whereby movable property can be pledged as a consequence by pledging real property. This is, let's just call it technicality, but this is part of the halachic way that it makes it binding, that he's machayev himself, agav his karka, is machayev the money. This is has to do with the halachas of debts being collectible from the property that a person lives over. And the above mentioned indebtedness and pledge were made with a kinyan suder. So that you do when you fill this out, you make a kinyan suder, which you have somebody else, the rav or the lawyer, if he's a firm person, and he represents Chana Goldstein, and then he represents Sarah Friedler, and he gives a suder, his pen or his yarmulke, whatever, if he's wearing a hat, he gives it over to the person, and the person lifts it up and says, by lifting this, I am acquiring this, and thereby giving over, being makna, this chov, and being makna the chov to this daughter and the chov to that daughter. Okay. Notwithstanding the foregoing, continues, this obligation shall be rendered null and void if the wishes expressed in my last will and or trust will be carried out in regard to any benefit that said will and trust benefits the obligees above named, meaning these two girls, and none of my heirs, meaning the Torah heirs, none of, like his son in this case, contest the disposition of my property set forth therein in regard to any benefit that said will and trust benefits the obligees above named. In other words, it's saying, very simply, that if you follow the will, then it's batel. Batel mevatel. This obligation should be rendered null and void. As long as you follow the will and you give each of your sisters 33% and you only keep 33% for yourself, then fine, shalom al Yisrael. And this is batel. You can rip this up. This is not nogea. This is only this debt is only chal if you're going to contest it. And you're going to say, no, you want to collect al pitori. You want to collect and you don't want to listen to the secular will. Then this debt is going to be chal and you're going to owe the money. Almost like a technicality, the event that an obligee will use this obligation to receive an amount that is greater than the share he is entitled to receive according to said wills and trust at the expense of another beneficiary who is not a contesting heir, will explain, named in said will and trust, this obligation shall be rendered null and void with respect to any such obligation. In other words, let's say there are a number of people involved, one of the boys might, or all the boys maybe try to collude with one of the daughters, and if assuming in the numbers, but there may be a way that they could say, okay, look, if each one gets a certain portion, if they collude with their one of their sisters and say that the sisters collude with the boys in a way that they will allow them to challenge it and pay it off, and she'll redistribute the money. This just makes it that it's butthole. In other words, there might be ways that a person can take advantage of this system. Someone who's supposed to get money based, one of the girls could perhaps take advantage of the system and collude with the boys to cut out another sister. So this says if that's done, then it's butthole. Then its obligation is butthole vis-a-vis that girl, and she just lost everything.
The cheshbon for the guy, what he wants to do so much.
Sorry? Say again?
Why do you have the cheshbon for the guy, what he needs to do?
Who's the guy?
If the sister he doesn't want to give, maybe he wants to give only to one, not the other.
Because the father wants it to go to Tisha.
So it's only the brothers that will contest.
Yeah, right. It's only the Torah Yorshim. Only the Torah Yorshim will contest. If a man has a son or sons, the other one's capacity. Nobody else could contest, right.
Okay.
In the event that, because we're talking,
we're not telling the guy what to do with his Yerusha.
No. I'm saying, but
we're
assume,
say
I mean, if he went to the Shia last week or 2 weeks ago, we did make a record. Assuming he wants to divide it 33% to each child.
Okay.
Now, by the way, if a person can contest it legally, like an outsider is going to come along, a nephew is going to come along, then this is nothing, that's nothing to do with. I'm talking about this is avoiding anyone who contested in Bastin and saying to Bastin, he wrote a will, what good is a will? The Torah says, I'm the Yoresh. So that's where this kicks in. If somebody wants to contest it based on secular law, then there's nothing, there's nothing to do with that. Now, in the event, continue paragraph 4, in the event that all my heirs contest or make objections to the disposition of my property made in my last will and trust, in regard to any benefit that said will and trust benefits the obligees above name, if all of the heirs, meaning all of the boys, let's say, okay, he has three boys and two girls, if all of the three boys get together and they say, we're going to fight it, let's get together, let's go to Bastin, and we're going to get a towing, and we're going to fight the will. So if they do that before a Jewish court, they go to it, then the aforesaid obligation to the obligees above named shall be deemed to vest absolutely. The moment they challenge it in Bastin, then this kicks in. So obviously, as it's going to say at the end, the girls should know about this, or there should be a trustworthy person who knows about this who will present it to the girls upon the death of the father, and they have this shahr, they have this paper, and when the brother takes it to Bastin to try to contest the will, they say, okay, contest the will, but Bastin needs to see this document, and the document will say that anyone who contests, if they all contest the will, then now, right now, immediately, he now owes $5 million to Chan and $5 million to Sarah, and the boys would be left with nothing. If one or more of my heirs contest the disposition of my property, maybe will or test in regard to any benefits, benefits the obligees above named, and some of my heirs are willing to abide by last wishes in regard to any benefits. And let's say there are three boys, and one of them wants to contest it, and the other two don't want to. So the other two don't want this chov to be. They say, "Well, go along with the will." There's only one boy. He's one of the brothers. Is starting trouble. So then, A, with respect to my non-contesting heirs, the two boys that are cooperating, all of the above-named obligees shall release such non-contesting heirs from honoring his share of the obligation. Meaning the sisters should be pater, the boys that are going along, that are cooperating, they should pater their brothers from having any chiyuv. In the event any of the above obligees fail or refuse to release a non-contesting heir, then these obligations shall be null and void with respect to any such obligation. Meaning, we tell the girls, If any of your brothers are cooperating and one of them is not, or some of them are not, the ones that are cooperating, you have to make them pat. You have to be mochel their chiyuv to pay anything. And if you don't, then you lose. Then I'm cutting you out, right? In other words, yes, make sure the sisters don't take it. So if the girls cooperate and pat are the boys that are not that are cooperating, then the girls will collect. If they try to contest it, then they will lose their share. B, with regard to a contesting heir, that means the one brother who's contesting the will, any contesting heir will be required to honor his or their share of the obligation to the extent of their share of the inheritance. Meaning, whatever chelik the Yerusha he gets, he'll have to pay. In other words, if there's five boys, he wants to get one-fifth of the Yerusha, so let's say it was a $5 million Yerusha, he would get $1 million. Okay, but the chov will make it large enough that a fifth of the chov will be more than the $1 million that he's arshining, so he'll lose everything. Okay, so basically, it's trying to cover all the bases with that the Torah Yorshim will not contest the will. They'll go along with it. But in the event that maybe one guy's rich, he doesn't care. He's just going to say he wants to see how strong halacha is. He's going to play around. He doesn't need his father's money, so he's going to contest this. So fine. So if he contests this, and then he'll get cut out, and his other brothers won't, and the sisters will have to, you know, pot to the other brothers from honoring this, and if they don't, then they'll lose, etc. So that it makes it that everybody who wants to inherit will cooperate.
Is the main point of this to prevent people from going against the will, or is the main point to make sure that everything's according to halacha, that no one gets it in the secular world that might be gazela?
No, not really. The main point is to make sure everybody goes according to the... Because if you, as I said, I think last week, if one knows for sure that his sons will completely honor his wishes, and he tells them, I want you to have two boys, two girls, my two sons, Yarshin, everything, but please share it with your sisters equally, whatever. If he knows for sure they'll do it, then there's no problem. They're allowed to give. They'll Yarshin it, then they'll give it away. And
Meaning if a man just wrote a secular will and it included his daughters... And no brother contested, is that a shiloh for the daughters that maybe they are supposed to give to the brother?
As long as the brother knows, for sure, if the brother knows that theoretically he can contest it, and he says, I don't care, I don't want to contest it, because you take yours, I'll take mine, then there's no problem.
But the brother has to be aware of that.
Yeah, right. If he's not aware of it, then still, according to many poskim, anyway, they, you know, but then it would be a shiloh. Put it that way, it would be a shiloh.
So you're saying that if you're pretty sure, you're 100% sure, that your kids are not going to contest the brother, boys, girls, whatever. You don't need this.
You don't need this, exactly. But in Halavai, that should be the case. But as any one of these, you know, contrasim you read will say, unfortunately, experience has shown that people who are in other areas very frum, when it comes to their pocketbooks, sometimes they sort of lose sight of of what's right and what's wrong.
Remember, you don't have to write the civil law in a way that with language to say that you will yarshin, but you will then share with your sister. You can still say straight out in there that everyone gets their share, including the woman, because then what you're doing is, again, that's kinegah atara. In other words, this is to be able to be a kiyam atara. So I know no one's going to dispute it, but don't I still have to write in my secular will in such a lashon that...
I don't really think so, because your secular will is just saying, this is what I would like to see happen. Now, I'm not asking for it. Once I write this, I'm not asking it for it to happen through Yerusha.
No, but if I'm not writing this, because Rebbe said, I know that the four boys will give to the two girls. But if I say, therefore, everybody gets this percentage, in essence, they're Yarshin directly, as opposed to saying, my boys are Yarshin, but I want to make sure that from your Yerusha, you give over to my...
No, because they're really not. I mean, I don't have the koach to change Yerusha just by...
So then how can I write something in the civil will that's connected itself by the Torah? I know that...
I say, because all the civil will is doing is saying, this is what I want to happen with my money. But how it's going to happen, either because the basin is going to say mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis, and the paskin like Reb Chaim Ozer, like that they you have to listen to this, kind of this, or because my sons are going to say, we're happy, we see this is what daddy wanted, we're happy to do it. And so that's why at the end of the day, that's why they're getting, even if this piece of this civil will, halacha, is worth nothing, but they're not getting it, because they're getting it because the boys are willing to give it to them. Right. So again, so either it works, like some posts say, in which case, fine, it works because it's mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis. I'm saying this is what I would like to see happen. I'm allowed to say that. I'm allowed to give my money. assuming I don't disinherit anyone, right? Assume I gave, we spoke about in previous weeks, I give everybody who is a Torah Yorish Dalad Zuzi, which shows what that is now. They'll make up, let's say it's $5,000, just for argument's sake. So I gave each of the boys $5,000. After that, the poskim say there's no Isser of Havaris Nachla. There's no Isser. Many poskim say there's no Isser of Havaris Nachla. And then, so however it happens, it happens. That's okay. Now, as you mentioned, some say that if a person does this, even theoretically, if he did not leave Dalad Zuzi, if he left nothing to a son or less Dalad Zuzi, it would still not be Havaris Nachla, because this is just like forcing him to give away to be mochel his money in a sense. It's not like if I wrote in the Rishon amount, which let's say arguably is only Bay Zuzi in today's standards, whatever that is. But for whatever reason, I want one son. I wanted him to get only Bay Zuzi. But he's still worth it for him to cooperate with this, because if he doesn't, he'll get zero. So then there are poskim that say that you haven't even done an Isser, because that's not Havaris Nachla. It's only Havaris Nachla if you do it through Nachla channels. This is not a Nachla channel. This is a Mechila channel.
Does the number on the note have to have some correlation? If you know your state's worth $2 million, can you say 50 million?
Okay,
there has to be some correlation.
That's interesting. So Rabbi Marburger, in his Kuntres, he recommends that it should be within reason. He said, make sure it's more than your assets, and if you're not sure how much you're going to be worth, so err on the side of, you know, making it too large rather than too small, because if you make it too small, you could lose the benefit. But he says, since the thing, you know, like, it looks a little bit like Harama, that, oh yeah, you made a debt to your daughter of $50 million. I mean, you never earned more than $10,000 in your life. So he says, try to make it with a number that's within something reasonable. Make sure it's large enough, but don't inflate it more than you need to.
So if someone's financial situation changes over time, they would have to actually go back and adjust the.
Right. So we'll get to that in a minute. But I must say, I didn't see any other svarim mention that. He writes that because we don't want it to look like real harama, like the whole thing is a joke. It would work anyway. But he says try to keep it within. Make sure it's big enough. He stresses. Make sure it's not too small. But still, don't make it 50 million. If you can make it 10 million instead of 50, make it 10 million. I have a good friend who's a lawyer in the city, who was a firm lawyer who deals with, this is his field, and he told me that I think his number was once something like, he used to use number like 10 million. A guy once told him, I expect to be worth more than 10 million. Anyway, in all seriousness, in all honesty, I don't think the 10 million is going to do it. I'm going to be worth more than 10 million based on, you know, nobody knows what they're going to be worth, but based on current state, if I pass away today, $10 million wouldn't be enough to make this work. So he changed his number. So, okay, let's just finish this, then we'll mention a few points related to what you said. Okay, and the rest is that the foregoing has been done in halachic manner in accordance with Talmudic jurisprudence, you know, that with a not tully and a tnai, you know, it beats all the conditions of tnai b'nei gadim le'ruvein, proper kinyonim, etc. It's not a impractical document. I mean, it's not a delok hasmachta, delok, like, these are some of the translation of some of the terms you hear in practically every Torah shtar. If you ever listen to a ksuba et achasna, you'll hear some of these said in Hebrew at the end of this. Just saying that this is real and effective. It's not a smachta, etc., etc. And one thing it says also, the end of that second last paragraph, and even if it be in my possession at the time of my death, shall not be deemed invalid by reason of either proof of payment or failure of delivery. Sometimes if a person dies and there's a shtar which he meant to mechayiv himself, but he finds it in his pocket, say, oh, he obviously never did it because it's still in his pocket. If he's mechayiv himself to Chana Goldstein, what's it doing in his pocket? It should be in her pocket. So saying that even if it's by me, I mean it. Maybe, you know, none of that should be acceptable as proof that I didn't mean it. I mean this 100%, etc. And now, the last thing, this document should be considered valid document only presented in a Jewish court, in a Beis Din. In case that is presented in a secular court, it should be deemed null and void. The point is that it's no shaykhah. The secular court, just go to the secular court with your, if you need to do it through,
I thought the point of that was that if the girl, the woman themselves, want to say, wow, I'm holding a note that's worth $10 million,
right. and they
go to secular court, right. Then it's worth nothing. This is only worth
very good
weight if you go to a din Torah, because they will understand.
Very good, very good. I mean, maybe the secular court won't accept some of the conditions. Say, right, it's a debt.
This is now to protect my sons from the daughter, right, who might bring this to.
Very good,
yeah,
very
court.
Good, very good. And yeah, I like it very much. And also, it's only necessary in Beis Din, because in the secular court, the secular will work if it ends up saying. And then this is just after the secular will is processed properly.
See, it has to be that, because otherwise the boys would try to get to the secular court. And then say, I'm a secular court, it's null. You got nothing anymore. So then if it's meant for that, then they would find a way to get the secular court, and then it would not be worth it. So it can't mean that. It's not for...
Yeah, right. It doesn't mean that when the boy... Anyone sows second floor, this becomes... It means
it's
presented...
It's for their protection, not for them.
Right, only presented to... Right, okay. Okay, then... So they advise giving a copy of this to an adam neman besides the child itself. Give it to an outside party who should hold on to it. Someone that he said, if either the lawyer, if he's a firm person, or else give it to another person who you could trust, etc. Now, I just want a couple of nekudas just to point out with regard to this. First of all, this would be effective, and this is one of the main milas of this over the other method that we mentioned. Even if the person is gains a lot of money or assets or whatever after he writes this. In other words, even at the time he wrote this, he was worth a certain amount, and by the time he passed away, he's worth twice as much. The debt is chal on all his money. But he doesn't. We mentioned if you want to gift your money b'chayecha in your lifetime, you want to write a shtar that I hereby a maknem my 50% of my assets to my daughter to be valid 1 minute before I die. That's only valid on what you own now. You can't be maknet to your daughter anything you don't own. So at each time the person earns more money, becomes worth more, he would have to redo it and redo it and redo it. This you don't have to redo, because this is saying there's a chov. The chov is chal even on money that you don't know. You could be mechayiv yourself a debt even for money that you don't have to pay with it. It's a debt. I might not have the money to pay it now. I'm mechayiv myself $10 million. I'm only worth $5 million now. It doesn't make a difference. The debt is still chal on any money. By the time I die, I have $10 million or $7 million or whatever number I have. It's all mechayiv. That's why you don't have to increase this. You don't have to redo it. Yes, that's the point. Because it's a chov. I owe, and that chov will be chal on anything, will be payable, and anything the boys yarshin, they'd have to give up to that chov. Even if I didn't have it, because I'm not being mocked to the money to them. I'm just a chov. The chov is balo, whatever you want to put it. Masha Enkin, if I actually want to transfer ownership of what I own now to them, that I can only do what I own now, and that's not going to, you'd have to keep redoing it. Also, as long as the number you put in on the second line, indebted to so-and-so in the amount of X, as long as you put in a large enough number, you don't have to do it. If you put in $5 million and then suddenly you win the $25 million lottery and now you're worth a lot more than $5 million, okay, then you have to even do it and to put in a greater number. Okay, but otherwise, as long as you put in a big enough number to begin with, you could just forget about it and live in the next 120 years without ever thinking of redoing it. There are certain limitations of this, but it's interesting. We gave four shiurim on this topic. This, it was really just Rashi Prakha. There's a lot more detail, and if when a person actually comes to write out his will, he should do it. It's best to do it and consult with a rav who's familiar with his nyanim, and best is even with a lawyer who's a firm lawyer also who knows his nyanim. So it's best, because there are some, we didn't discuss every detail. For just one thing, that for example, there is a discussion that perhaps svarim should go only to boys. That even no matter how you do it, there's a discussion in halach about that. There's even a discussion about certain karka. But I'm just mentioning these things. These are things just to be aware of, that there are other details. But one point I want to say also is that if you want to include in your will people that aren't born yet, let's say a person wants, when he passes away, he wants every one of his grandchildren to get a certain part of his yerusha. He wants to give X amount to each grandchild. And at the time he's writing the will, they're not all born yet. He'll hopefully have more grandchildren between the time he writes the will and the time he passes away. So you can't write this shtar that you're holding in your hands. By if you want, anyone else wants one, I have copies here. This shtar, you can't write, I hear said I am indebted to my unborn grandchild. You can't do that. You can't be mechayiv yourself a debt to an unborn person. So it wouldn't work for that. So you'd have to either do it, if you're writing, if your will says that every grandchild who's living at the time that that you pass gets X, if you want to make sure they get it and everything works smoothly, you would have to fill this out again. Or there's another shtar you can get, which is just a little bit different, where you entrust a third party with the money that he should distribute it to, the way you want. It's the same idea, but works a little bit differently. And this way, it doesn't make a difference who's actually born. But if as long as everybody that you're giving a part to in your will is living at the time that you write it, then you don't need that. Then this is fine. Okay. Just one second. Yeah. Also, again, of course, if a person wants to change his will, if a person changes his will, he doesn't have to redo this. Because this shtar just says, at the time of my death, whatever legal will is legally binding, that you have to cooperate with, or else this debt will vest. You'll owe this money. So whatever the will, it doesn't make a difference if at the time I wrote the shtar, my will said X and now my will says Y. It doesn't make a difference. This shtar says whatever will is now, at the time of my death, whatever will is legally binding, then this debt is you know, enforces it. The only way you would want to change or have to change it, if you want to, in your will, you want to include other people. Like you decided that whoever it is, some relative did you the biggest chesed in the world, that you want to leave him your nephew, you want to leave him a part of your Yerusha also. And he wasn't included in the will originally. So then you have to write out another chatzi shtar, another one of these shtaros to him, because he's not a Torah Yorish. You have children, he's not a Torah Yorish. So to make sure that he gets, and he's not left, that you'd have to write another one of these. But as long as you don't add new names, right, like I said, no unborn kids, and you don't add any new names, even if you change the amounts, that you decide originally you divided it to 33, whatever, then one of your daughters becomes a billionaire, so you decide to leave her only 20%, and the other daughter, 50%, and the other son, whatever, whatever it is, then that doesn't make a difference. Your will could change without having to change this. All right, that was clear? Okay. Yes.
So why if you add some other person that's not a Torah Yorish, do you have to change this again? For your sons and your daughter, because this addresses that.
Yeah, but it's not just my daughter. I want my nephew to get a share also, and they could all get together and leave him out of it. The daughters, the daughters and sons can get together and say, why should he get this? That cousin's... why should he get? And the daughters all get together and decide, tell the boys, okay, boys, you can test the will. Fine. You owe us $1 million. Fine. Okay, thank you, Beis Din. We'll take care of it. And the sisters will be mochel, the sons, and they'll split everything themselves. And the 20% that the nephew's supposed to get, he won't get. Right? And they just get together themselves. And they'll become best friends now because they want to keep 100% of the money rather than 80% of the money. So they'll all get together. He's not here. There's no shtar. He has nothing... There's no shtar. Just like if you didn't write it to one, let's say a man has two daughters, and he only writes the shtar to one daughter, so then they can get together and leave out that other daughter, and the other ones just collude. And so same thing with nephew. If you want to make sure, if you want to leave your nephew 20% of your estate, and you might make sure he gets it, so you have to write a shtar with his name in it as well, so that he'll get it. Okay, the last thing I just wanted to say before the bill is that just because I mentioned it last week, but I didn't, in terms of giving tzedakah, It is very highly recommended by Poskim to give tzedakah, b'shas misah, so to include that, in this case, in a will. And even though when a person's living, it says, ha-mevazbez lo yevazbez yosim mechamesh, you shouldn't give away more than 20% of your money while you're living, unless maybe a person is an asher mufla, but at least 20% is the cap, that doesn't apply at death. At the time of death, it could be more. So shayla exactly how much. There's a Ramah that says, you could theoretically give away everything. Other posts can say not. Some say only a third. Some say a half. The Aruch HaShulchan says a very stark half. So it's something just to keep in mind, though, that it is definitely appropriate to give tzedakah, to include tzedakah as part of the distribution of your assets. What the amount should be, it's either consult with the Rav or, who knows you or you can explain your situation to. It's going to depend, of course, on your family and other factors. But the cap of 20% of Chomesh does not apply b'shas misa. And as I said, the sheet of what is the cap varies from, let's say, just from a third, 33%, up to 100%. Okay, so as I said, these are the Rashi Prakim, these Pashurim. I hope that they were helpful. Be'ez Shem next week, it'll be the Tuesday before Purim, we're going to talk about Hilchos Purim, Shem, and then there'll be a couple of weeks for Pesach. I'm going to do some things in Hilchos Pesach. Anyways, I have more copies, though. It's very easy to... And then after Pesach, we'll see Be'ez Shem what's happening.
School of Arichas Yomim to make a will, or...
I don't know, I've heard such a thing.
They say is a school of...
Yeah, I don't know.
So I can leave the shtar, Mirza Shem.
Yeah. Okay.